Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Happy Friday and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things Food Network with your favorite Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and it is Memorial Day weekend. Of course, this is the unofficial kickoff to summer, and the weather has been so beautiful in New York lately. I am so excited for this summer season, namely because of everything we've been through the last year. I feel like there is this bright light at the end of the tunnel. I'm so excited. Today, we have a great kickoff to this summer season with a Food Network regular. She's talking all about her casual, fun-loving approach to cooking and how she keeps it easy AF in the kitchen. You know her as a judge on Chopped and from her appearances on Iron Chef America, Beat Bobby Flay, and Tournament of Champions. It's the always lovely Amanda Freitag. Amanda, welcome to the pod. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This is really exciting. We have a lot to talk about.
We do. I am excited to chat with you for a number of reasons. Obviously, we're going to talk all about Chopped and Food Network. But I came across something about you that you and I both have in common, and that is our aversion to working with sea urchin. I always feel like this is an ingredient that I'm supposed to be obsessed with, and I'm just not. And I'm wondering if you kind of feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't like to eat it. I don't like to work with it. I don't like anything about it, which is terrible because sometimes I keep that a little bit of a secret when I'm with other chefs who are in love with it or make a sauce with it, or, you know, we've had it as an ingredient in many, many competitions, and somehow, some way, I've escaped it. So fingers crossed.
Well, I didn't mean to out you to everybody, but I just felt like a kindred, a spirit relationship to you as far as that ingredient goes. I did try to work with it in an uni carbonara, and I'll just leave it at that and let you know that kind of ruined it for me forever. Yes, I don't recommend trying to make it into a sauce if you already have a slight aversion to the very seafood, oceany taste that is uni. Anyways, I'm excited to talk to you, and I'm excited to kind of hear your journey, and we're going to kind of start with that personal story. So I want to start with Amanda AF, which is something that you've leaned into as a hashtag, a cooking series. Obviously, it's your initials, but also a lighthearted play on that as far as the slang term. But I'm curious, if you were to define Amanda AF, what would that be? Like, what would your friends say make you, you?
Well, I'm finally using my initials in a proper way. I think because sometimes what may not come across, let's say, on the judge's table is that I am extreme and silly and fun and, you know, always laughing, always the life of the party, always the one who's, you know, wanting to turn up the volume. So I don't think that always comes across. So everything I do is usually pretty extreme, very detailed. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So anything that's sort of, I think AF to me means you're doing it all the way. You're going to the highest level. It's not, you know, it's not mediocre.
So you were basically born into these initials in all shapes and forms, because it sounds like that really does. It's not just a fun play. It is something that kind of defines who you are. So I think that's pretty cool. I read that growing up, your knack for cooking wasn't necessarily something you were pursuing right away, but it was something that was recognized by everyone from your grandparents to your high school home ec teacher. And they really were the ones that encouraged you to attend the Culinary Institute of America. What do you think your home ec teacher saw in you back then that made her believe that you were destined for this career in a culinary world?
Well, I don't know if she could see the whole future, but I think she saw that I had a real interest in it and that I didn't know where to go with that at that time. You know, that was not a career in this country that was regarded as a highly respected career. In Europe and France and other parts of the world, it was. But here it was still sort of blue collar labor. And I think she took me down a path of introducing me to the Culinary Institute of America that was honoring this tradition of being a chef and having that be well respected. So I started working in a restaurant as well when I was in high school, and I didn't know she worked in a restaurant on the weekends. She was in the restaurant industry as well. So she understood the love for the chaos of the industry.
Do you remember those conversations with her? Like, what about what she was kind of telling you made you realize, all right, this is something like I could really do?
Yeah, because I was working in a restaurant at the time, and so was she, and it was new for me, and I really loved it, but I didn't know everything about it, and I wanted to know more. You know, my brother was a high-achieving academic. My other brother was super smart. They all were going on to college, and that's just not something I wanted to do. I wanted to really just pursue this and only this. And, you know, going to culinary school was the way to do it. And I think that, I mean, I've kept in touch with her. Her name is Joan Levine. And she's proud, I hope.
I think so.
And excited to see, you know, how that path went.
I mean, she's obviously had such a huge impact on you. Do you think that, thinking back to, you know, her as a teacher and as a mentor, has that somewhat influenced maybe your love of teaching and your love of inspiring people to kind of get started in the kitchen?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it took me a while to realize I have a little bit of a teacher in me. Because, you know, when I first came out of school, you're working hard as a line cook, a prep cook, you know, and then when you become a sous chef and a chef, you have to teach people, you have to train them, you know, you're only as good as that team. So if you're not training properly, you know, you're making your life a lot harder. So in restaurants, I was always training. So I knew that I had to be really good at that to make it work well. And especially if you were a line cook, let's say you were working the salad station, but you wanted to go to the meat, you got to get that guy trained on salad so you can go over to the next station, you know. So, and then as the years went by, you know, I did a lot of cooking demonstrations, and I realized again how much I love that, because people really are afraid to say they don't know how to cook, or they don't know how to cut an onion, or they don't know how to whip cream. And so I try to open the door for them to say that and really help them get in the kitchen. So to me, it's really rewarding to see people learning and doing something they wouldn't have done, you know, just because maybe they spent time with me making a recipe.
Yeah, I mean, I love that approach to cooking, because, I mean, you are a classically trained, world-renowned chef, but you do have this very somewhat casual, but also very approachable attitude in the kitchen. Is that something you developed along the way? Are you always kind of just an easygoing person by nature?
I'm easygoing, but, you know, as you know, the restaurant industry can be very stressful and there's pressure. But I do think you catch a lot more flies with honey. And I think that if you can really get somebody in a comfortable place, they're going to work at their best that way. You get them confident and you reward them, you know, with whatever it may be that they're looking for, whether they want to learn more or they want, you know, another position or they want more money. It's, you know, I think it's really, you know, teaching and teaching with a soft voice can really make a difference. But there are times where you got to get angry.
Absolutely. I mean, why do you think, though, that people are so intimidated by cooking or just kind of even making that first step? Or like you said, admitting that they don't really know how to cut an onion or do something that they feel should just be, you know, universally known.
the kitchen's a scary place. For me, I didn't realize it because I've been in it for so long. But, you know, there's very sharp knives. There's fire. There's heat. I mean, you forget about all of those things that are going on in the kitchen. And I think that people sometimes feel like the food is in control of them. You know, the recipe's in control of them. You're in control. You got this. This is all you, you know? So I think, again, everybody has that perfectionist thing. It has to come out perfect. It has to look good. I have to take a picture of it for Instagram. No, you don't. You know, you can make it, you can mess it up, or you can make it and then make it your own. I think there's a lot of trial and error that goes into learning how to make a dish. And I just want people to start, because if you never start, you're never going to get there. So just get in there.
Get in there. I mean, you mentioned Instagram, you know, and we've seen kind of this, especially over the last year, this social media phenomenon where, you know, people are, you know, displaying their kitchen creations on whether it's Instagram or TikTok or what have you. And kind of this generation of like things going viral and that kind of thing. And I'm wondering if like what you think of all that. Is that, you know, something that is going to help people get in there and maybe like try something that they hadn't thought that they could do? Or is it push them a little bit further away from it?
I mean, I think it's really helpful visually for me. You know, I love cookbooks and I grew up looking at cookbooks and I would always want to see a picture of the recipe, right? What is it supposed to look like? What is even the process? I loved when cookbooks started to come out with the step-by-step pictures of the process. And I think it's extremely helpful. Yes, it can be intimidating when there's, you know, pictures that are done with food photography and lights and food stylists, and people don't know that and they think that they could make it look like that. But I think pictures and visualization of cooking and dishes is very helpful. And, you know, I give props to any young cooks or chefs right now who are working and taking pictures of what they're doing at the same time. You know, I'm an old school person. I never had my phone in the kitchen with me, you know, so that's actually harder to do and really get that done so that people can see what you're doing.
I think you are doing that in a way, in another way, you know, visually on social media through your series Easy AF, kind of demystifying this cooking for people and making them feel like it is something they can do. Tell us a little bit more about this series that you have been, you know, kind of producing. It seems like from your home for people out there.
I just started to obviously make these videos with my iPhone. It was the need and the want to connect with people through food, right? You know, I always want to do that. I get to do that on Chopped and all of the Food Network shows that I do. And, you know, I wanted to do it on another level where I was teaching them the basics, right? Because I do think, as I've learned over the years, people want the basics. And, you know, I work closely with my director of communications, Kedzie Teller, and he's younger than I am, maybe not as good of a cook, great with graphics and social media and other things. And, you know, using him as a litmus of saying, well, do you want to see how to make caramelized onions? Well, yeah, I don't know how to do that. Do you want to see how to make a fried egg? Yeah, I don't know how to do that. And then I'd be like, okay, let's do souffle or this or that. He'd be like, no. Back it up, because as a chef, you want to show off, right? I don't want to just make the simple things, but really the things that are the most requested are the things like the fried egg, the whipped cream, the mashed potatoes. Yeah, I would love to do other things and I'd love to show off. But at the same time, I want to give people something that will literally make dinner that night, you know, that they will actually go in their kitchen and do it. That's more satisfying than just blowing them away with what I know. You know, I want to know that they did it and I want to see a picture of it.
And do they do what's the feedback been like? Do people, you know, kind of try to recreate some of the stuff that you're teaching and take a picture and tag you or send it to you and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. The feedback has been incredible. We see a lot of, you know, dishes that people have made after they've watched a video. We see a lot of comments, you know, people requesting other things. You know, I'm their go-to, right? I am their teacher. So they want to, if they've had trouble, you know, cutting a piece of chicken or learning how to carve a turkey, they're going to ask me for it, which is so great, because then, you know, the feedback is good, because there's a million things you could do, right? You know, you could do anything with food. So I'd love to hear what people want to learn.
Absolutely. I mean, on the other side of the spectrum, you know, you live in New York City, have worked at some of New York's most acclaimed restaurants. When you think about maybe that more elevated style that we're not seeing on your Instagram series and your social media series, what kind of influence has the city of New York had on you as a chef and your style of cooking?
New York City has influenced me tremendously. You know, this is where I cut my teeth as a chef in my career, and I've worked with incredible chefs along the way, all different kinds of cuisines, anything from Thai, French to Mediterranean to Italian, you know, to American comfort food. So, you know, this is where also I used to come as a young cook and eat in all the different restaurants and see what the chefs were doing and try everything and want to know how they did it and want to recreate it. And that was a way that a lot of the chefs that I came up with in the city, you know, chefs like Scott Conant, chefs like Aaron Sanchez, Mark, Jeffrey, Alex, we were all working at the same time in restaurants. We were all young cooks. Picture that. In different restaurants around the city, we were all these little young cooks that were trying to learn and see what the big chefs were doing. And so I learned by eating. I learned by learning. You know, I would just watch what the other chefs were doing in the kitchen next to me, or obviously the chefs that I was working for. But, you know, New York City is a melting pot of ethnicities and cultures. And, you know, it's why I still love it and live here, because there's nothing like it. And I couldn't get an experience like this, in my mind, anywhere else in the time that I came up in restaurants.
I completely agree with you. I mean, do you have a favorite that you can mention, or is that too hard because you're leaving too many people out?
You know, people ask that question all the time. That's really difficult, because if you ask me today, you know, what's your favorite restaurant? It's the one I'm craving, right? Like, uh-huh. I'm craving Cafe China because I want Szechuan, you know? That's my favorite restaurant today. Tomorrow it might be pasta at Residora. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, because it's so difficult. I would never just pick one. I can't do it.
Speaking of restaurants, Amanda tells us all about her extensive restaurant menu collection and how she obtains them. Plus, we talk all about Chopped and Tournament of Champions. That's coming up next.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On the subject of restaurants, I understand that you also collect restaurant menus, which I think is so awesome because I started doing that at one point, but I never had a good system for keeping them all in one place. So I feel like they would either get lost or damaged. So first of all, I'm curious where you keep them because I'm picturing like a big trapper keeper style binder that we had growing up.
First of all, when you said a good system, I was thinking about how to steal them. You need a really big purse.
Okay. So you don't ask, you just take them.
Most of the time I ask. There were moments where I didn't ask. That was a long time ago. But I have actually one of those storage bins, a big plastic storage bin that has a top and sealed, and it's in there. Some are in folders. Some are so big that they have to be laid out. But, you know, I'm actually kind of heartbroken because I know that we're coming into this next generation of restaurants without menus, restaurants with, you know, QR codes. So I'm really glad that I had that weird little habit of stealing menus because some of them have beautiful artwork on them. You know, some of them have the names of the chefs and the cooks in the kitchen. Some of them have little stories and anecdotes. Like, menus to me were really important and really gave you a sense of what the restaurant was like, you know, not just the food and the experience, but the menu to me was just that invitation, that first introduction.
That is so true. How many do you think you have?
Ah, God. I probably have at least 200 menus.
Wow.
At least.
Which one would you grab in a fire if you could only grab one?
Oh, my God. I have a beautiful menu from Boulay in New York City. I mean, it looks like the front is hand painted. And I can remember that meal. If you were to ask me about that meal, I could tell you today. But also I did an internship at a restaurant in Paris called Arpège, and I have a menu from there. So those two, I get to grab two.
Okay. That's fair. Well, I mean, you are so organized, so you could easily grab the entire bin in a fire and not have to choose just one. You kind of mentioned a couple of these that hold, you know, special or specific memories for you. I mean, take us back to one of those. What about the menu kind of brings back that entire restaurant experience, like, to the front of your brain?
Well, I remember eating at Boulay in the early 90s, and I had never really had an experience like that. I don't know if anybody who's listening remembers this restaurant, but it was in Tribeca, and when you walked in, there was a big, huge wooden door, and you would open the door, and in the foyer, there would be crates and baskets of apples and quince, and the perfume from that. You just walked into that, and it was instantly stimulating your senses. You were like, oh my God, and you were taken away. To me, restaurants that take you to a whole nother place are genius. And then, you know, the whole experience. So just sitting there with this big, huge menu, again, which we will probably not see too many of in the future, and looking at everything and visualizing everything and trying to decide what to have. And some of the colors on the menu to me now in my memory match some of what we ate. And it was just a journey of food that I had never experienced. And it was so inspiring. It just made me want to cook every single one of those dishes.
I love that. I love, as you were talking, I was trying to remember if there's, you know, a menu that did that for me. And I remember going to Central in Lima, Peru, and because of Peru's, you know, different elevations and different types of topography, they did their menu by like elevation of where that ingredient came from, which I thought was like a really cool way to just tell the story of Peru, but also like of their restaurant, which was really neat. I have to find it. It's somewhere up in storage. I need to find it.
They're fun to look at.
No, it's true. And it's such a good point, you know, that we are kind of entering this phase where either they're going to be very easy to take because, you know, they're going to throw them away anyways. Or like you said, the QR codes, and maybe we won't have them anymore, which is sad. But that's cool that you have such a treasure trove of those memories just sitting around that you can kind of leaf through at any one time. Well, speaking of restaurants, I know you recently opened up a cafe in Dallas called Rise in Time. And I know that it's obviously a very tough time to be opening restaurants. So how did that project come about?
Well, clearly, we were working on it way before the pandemic. So it's a cafe, and it's in this really beautiful area of Dallas downtown in the AT&T Discovery District. So there's multiple other restaurants in this food hall, and AT&T revamped this whole area, and there's this beautiful outdoor seating, huge screen to show movies and sports events. So the whole thing was going to be this fantastic new place to go. And my last visit down there was on March 10th of 2020. I had just flown home and I was ready to go back. We were just fixing some things in the kitchen and tweaking some things on the menu, tasting coffee, interviewing people, tasting pastries. And I haven't been back since. But the great part is the team down there is unbelievable. And they are killing it. They're making beautiful food. People are loving it. Coffee was a big deal for me. So we have Maddie, our barista. We have Patrick, our chef. And Brian and Adrian and Kevin are all making it exactly what we wanted it to be. And so I couldn't be more proud to have my name be on that, a part of that. And I can't wait to get back down there.
Yes, I know. You mentioned that date and it's just, you know, it is such a triggering time because that's like literally, you know, the day before everything really shut down, the world shut down, you know, to be honest. And kind of on that note, I know one of the things that the restaurant has been doing is providing, you know, free meals to frontline workers under this idea that we're all in this together, which is so true. Why was that so important to both you and also the restaurant group that you mentioned is behind this project?
Yeah, there are multiple different ways that Rise in Time contributed when the weather was terrible and everybody was suffering in Texas. We contributed to World Central Kitchen because they were giving out food all around the area, and also to a women's shelter. And we're really involved in that and helping them get back on their feet and making them food and bringing that to their homes. And, you know, obviously as chefs, we feed people, right? That's in our nature. Part of what we were talking about in my growing up life of food, you know, in my family life, food was everything. And I've said this before, but I know people can relate. If you're not feeling good, you would eat some food. If you're happy, let's eat. You know, if you're tired, maybe you should eat something. You know what I mean? Even if you didn't feel well, if you had a stomach ache, oh, you should probably have a little cracker. Food was everything. So to me, food is everything. And to think of anybody suffering without food, anybody feeling hungry and not even being able to function because of that is a real soft spot for me. So it's in my nature, and I know a lot of chefs, it's in their nature to feed. We just want to feed people. And we used to do it for just for entertainment. And now I'm so glad I can use any kind of platform that I have to feed people for survival, to help them get through the hard times.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you said it really well. It is something that we all have in common. You know, it's something that unifies all of us, is this idea of, you know, sitting down and breaking bread together. So I think that making sure that that can still happen in a really tough time is super important. I know fans are listening, going to want to know about Food Network as well. So as we kind of transition from this personal life, this growing up life into your career as a Food Network personality, I guess give us a condensed version of how that came about. Like, how did you go from Culinary Institute of America to Food Network?
Wow. It was multiple restaurant jobs leading up to one where I was a chef at a restaurant called The Harrison in Tribeca, New York City, a beloved restaurant that had opened in 2001, but I was hired to take over in 2008, a really difficult time in the world. We had to pump up the press a little bit, right? And so I had to change the style of the restaurant, change the entire menu, get a New York Times review, which in 2008 was still a big deal. I got 2 stars, everybody.
Congrats.
And so, you know, a very competitive industry. You know, I would go on the Today Show, Good Morning America, just try and promote the restaurant. We'd go to many different events. And we had a PR team with us. It was Philip Baltz, Baltz and Company. And our representative was Jesse Gerstein. And Jesse and I spoke all the time because there was so much going on, so much activity about the restaurant. And one day I got a call from somebody at the Food Network to the restaurant. And I was in the little chef's office under the stairs. And if anybody is a restaurant worker, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And they said, "Chef, you have a call." And I picked it up and it was somebody from the Food Network asking me if I wanted to compete on Iron Chef America. And I said, "Thank you, but no thank you." Oh my God, because first of all, that wasn't at all my style. You know, I always thought it was Iron Chef America is like exploding ketchup bombs and caramel cages and foam and smoke. And I was a little more, you know, comfort food. And so Jesse called maybe 10 minutes later and he said, "Hey, did you just get a call from the Food Network? And did you just say no?" And I was like, "Yes and yes." I was, of course, very honest with him about the whole thing. And he's like, "Listen," he's like, "I think it would be great for you to do it." And he's like, "I think it'd be great for the restaurant. And And he's like, I really am going to persuade you to do this. And I'm so glad he did, obviously. And I competed against Bobby Flay on Iron Chef America in 2008, I believe. Yeah, it was 2008. I don't know if it aired until 2009, but it was very exciting, very nerve-wracking. Luckily, my parents got to come because you could still have an audience at that time. And, you know, I remember seeing my dad and he was like, why are you so nervous? And I was like, I don't know. This is crazy. This is make or break, you know? And he's like, you're going to leave here and you're going to go to work. You're going to go to work. You have dinner service to do. He's like, you know what you're doing. Just have fun. So the minute he said, just have fun, it changed everything for me. And I just had a blast. I just had a blast with it. It was fun and it was a great opportunity. And so much more came after that.
Absolutely. I mean, by the way, going up against Bobby Flay in your first ever Food Network experience, appearance. I mean, that's nothing to shy away from. And you lost by 1 point. Does that haunt you?
Well, it haunts me because it happens to me quite often, actually.
Really?
Well, last year I lost Tournament of Champions by 1 point.
That's right.
I don't know if it's better to lose by 1 point or to lose by 10. Either way, it's not so great. But, you know, years later, I came back and I competed against Bobby on Beat Bobby Flay. And I was able to get some redemption there.
Absolutely. How did it feel to even the score?
It felt great. And again, now, you know, I'm so lucky to, you know, be a part of the Food Network family and, you know, call Bobby a friend, you know, after all these years. So it was really a friendly competition, but obviously I won and I was happy to win.
Yeah, you did. I actually remember this episode because it was a Chopped theme episode. And you made, what was the dish that you made? Because it was kind of something obscure that he had never heard of.
Well, and I think that's the strategy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a dish called Fesenjoon. And it's a Persian dish with chicken thighs, pomegranate molasses, and walnuts that my dear friends who are Persian that I cook with all the time and when I visit them taught me how to make. So I pretty much figured he didn't know it, although he got really close. I was worried there for a second, but he did. He did, you know, joke around with me about it. He's like, where did you come up with this?
I think the only reason it was close is because it has pomegranate in it, and that's in his wheelhouse. I think you hit it on the nose. I think the strategy is to, you know, try to pick something that he doesn't know and or maybe has never heard of in that case. But as you mentioned, you are a judge on Chopped, a beloved judge at that. We've had Ted and Alex on the podcast previously, talked a lot about the show. I'm excited to hear your experience, though. What is your favorite part about being a judge on that show?
I mean, you mentioned Ted and Alex. First of all, the family, the Chopped family. We've been together for so long now. It's so fantastic. You know, we've been doing this for almost 12 years. We've grown up together in a weird way. So I just love being around everybody. People have been married, had children. You know, this is a big deal to have this amazing family of people work together. But what I always talk about is how it's still exciting. It's still exciting every day when we come in, we sit at the judges' table, four chefs who we've never met before walk into that room and anything can happen. And I mean anything can happen. And, you know, kudos to Sarah Hornby, our culinary producer, who puts together these baskets over the years, how many different combinations, and that makes a difference, you know, between the baskets, the chefs, their skill level, their desire, their nervousness. Like, there's always this really high energy in the room. And you would think after so many episodes that would go away. And it doesn't. It's always there. I'm always so excited to see what's going to happen.
Do you have a favorite memory of all time? Or is that just like the restaurant question? Too hard to pin one down?
There's so many. It ebbs and flows from, you know, delicious bites of food to disasters to, you know, tears. There's been so many emotions in that kitchen. You know, people bring so much to the table when they walk into that kitchen. I've been amazed and disgusted.
I'm sure. I won't make you call anybody out on worst bite that you've had. But are you able to sympathize, you think, with the contestants because you've been on the other side of it before, because you've been that competitor and maybe, you know, not won when you wanted to?
Yeah, I mean, I think my judging style is really based on the fact that I've been on the other side of that table. And I always want to make sure I give a comment that win or lose, they're going to walk away learning something, right? And that's that teacher in me, you know, because that's what happened to me through competition. I competed a lot, you know, Iron Chef, then next Iron Chef again, and Chopped, and all these competitions. I feel like every time I go through a round, even one round of battle, I've learned something. I learned what not to do. I learned what to do. I've amazed myself what I can do under pressure, you know, and then you start to learn little tips and tricks. So I just want to make sure that whatever comments I'm giving them, it gives them a little insight into what happened and what we're tasting. Because, you know, 9 times out of 10, the chef that's walking up to that table, they know what went wrong. So, you know, I'm not going to remind them of what they already know. I'm trying to give them a piece of information about maybe how the flavors came together or something, you know. So I think of myself as the nice judge and the fair judge, because I always really want to just give them information instead of make them cry.
I can see that. I can see you as like the welcoming judge, the one that they might look to if they're feeling a little bit nervous. But speaking of competing, you were just on Tournament of Champions as a number one seed. Unfortunately, got beat out by Tiffany Faison. Anything you would do differently in hindsight?
Oh my God, there's so many things I would have done differently. Yes, I would have used curry paste. I mean, anybody who watched it knows I use curry powder instead of paste. I made a lot of rookie mistakes, although it was close. I really did love my dish. I have to say, this time around, I think because of environment and what we had all gone through in the last year, I wasn't my same edgy competitive self. You know what I mean? I was in this very loving mood. I was so happy to see Tiffany and Manit and everybody that was in that kitchen, and to see Guy and to like be a part of that, this team of people. I remember walking out when we were first all together, and it was like, Guy was calling us superheroes. He's like culinary superheroes. And, you know, I was just honored to be there. And, you know, having to compete against Tiffany, who I love, you know, and we're friends, and, you know, I was rooting for her. How do you figure that, right? I wanted her to win and I wanted me to win. I wanted us both to win somehow. So it was so much going on. And the randomizer is really, I've never seen anything like it. You know, as much as we have these really difficult baskets, and the riddle of the basket is the hardest thing to solve, the randomizer is genius, evil genius. Evil, evil genius. And it can take down the best chefs, and it has, and it will again.
I mean, is it so random? You said you didn't want mussels and it landed on mussels. So I don't know, conspiracy theories abound.
Yeah, I got thrown off a little bit by that, because it was really probably the thing that I was dreading the most. And of course, I should know, right? I've been through this a million times. I should know that I'll get the thing that I don't want.
I mean, what makes you want to compete in a competition like this, not once, but twice? I mean, that seems like something that, you know, one and done. Like, you did it once, like, I'm good.
Because I'm a masochist. you know, I think, and I do this all the time to myself, if I'm not making myself a little bit uncomfortable, then I'm really not challenging myself, you know? And I think you have to be constantly learning in any career. And if you're not pushing yourself into those super duper uncomfortable places, you're not going to move forward. So I love Guy, and I love that Guy has asked me back. I hope he asked me back again. Guy, are you listening? I want to do it again.
So you would go back a third time?
I would. You know what? The thing about being eliminated is I just wanted to stay and play. You know, I just wanted to keep going. You know, I just wanted another chance. And that's, again, and the other thing about Tournament of Champions, you get one chance and that's it. I would do it again. I would, because as you know, chefs are really driven and I want to fix it. I want to do better. You know, I came in as number one seed and I only had one chance to do that. Now, where am I going to rank?
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. I like competitive, that competitiveness, that spirit, like that makes you want to go back, not just to do it again, but just to better yourself and try to improve on your last experience. So I totally get that. Before we let you go, I want to do a quick rapid fire round real quick, like whatever first thing comes to your mind. So what's your favorite food trend right now?
Plant-based.
Okay, that's a good one. That's very trendy. What's your favorite dish to cook at home right now?
Omelets.
Omelets? Okay. All right. I think, who else said that? Tyler Florence, I think, was talking about omelets.
Such a good breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Absolutely. Are you a beer, wine, or a cocktail person?
Yes.
That is the best answer to that question that could ever be. That was fantastic. Favorite bite or dish you've tried on Chopped?
Oh, caramel orange miso cucumber skate by Madison Cowan.
Wow. All right. That was a nice pull. What's your favorite show on Food Network that you are not on?
Good Eats.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one. And finally, what's your favorite food city?
San Francisco. It's still San Francisco. It's always been San Francisco. I'm still going to say San Francisco. There's other ones that are creeping up on my list, but San Fran, I love you.
San Francisco is a great food city. I lived there for 5 years, so I second that it's great. But it's also a tough question because there's a lot of good contenders out there. One final question, our last one that we ask everybody on Food Network Obsessed, and that would be, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert. You can time travel. You can spend absurd amounts of money. There's no rules. Any chef can serve it to you. You can cook it, whatever you want. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert.
Wow. Okay, so I would have breakfast at the Culinary Institute of America because when they did the commencement speech, they made me the best scrambled eggs ever. I would have lunch. Oh my God. I would probably have lunch in Paris at Arpège, and I would take my time and it would be boozy and bubbly. And I would have dinner in Bologna. I would just have I would start with vitello tonnato and I have a big bowl of bolognese and God knows what I would have for dessert, but I would hope there'd be some kind of chocolate cake.
That seems like a pretty perfect day. I mean, starting with your roots and ending with some delicious meals in Europe. Sounds pretty nice right about now. We can start
Let's
traveling.
Arrange it. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Yes. International travel. Here we come. Thank you so much. It was so fun, you know, talking to you about your life and your life on Food Network as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
A boozy, bubbly lunch in Paris. I'm in and I am officially ready for summer and travel again. You can catch Amanda on Food Network at the Chopped Judges Table. And as always, thanks so much for listening. And make sure you follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single thing. Of course, if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday on Food Network Obsessed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.